This is Tea Earl Grey Heart, an unofficial Star Trek fan podcast from the Other Side Podcast Network. Hello and welcome to Tea Earl Grey Heart, an unofficial Star Trek fan podcast from the Other Side Podcast Network. My name is Dave and I am joined this week, as every week, by my good friend over in the Switzerlanden, Yannick. Yannick, how are you?
I'm fine, thanks. I'm very excited to record another episode. It's been a week and a half, actually, because we did record the other one early. Because of stuff, and it seems like it's been ages.
It does. I was put out by the last recording because it was early, and now I'm put out by this one because it's seemingly later. But it doesn't matter. No. Anyway, this is episode 17, and on this week's show, we're going to be reviewing episode 17 of season 4 of Star Trek Enterprise Bound. And we will also be doing our regular fortnightly roundup of the news. Not that I'm looking forward to it,
because there's some
nasty stuff in there. But before we go into the review, I suppose we should say a very heartfelt thanks to John from Canada for joining us last week.
Yes.
It was actually a hilarious recording. I'm very disappointed, actually, as to how much stuff I had to take out of the recording, because all of the good stuff that was basically your erstwhile hosts and their guest making complete and utter idiots of themselves, which wouldn't have come out particularly well on the final show, but it actually were incredibly funny, which is it's a shame, but you know, we're professionals.
Maybe we should have a separate stream with the bloopers. A separate feed.
We could do, but that show would be as long, if not longer, than the main.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
But it was a brilliant episode. Yes. So thank you very much indeed, John, for joining us.
Thanks, John. And hopefully you will be able to join us when we do the Voyager's extravaganza.
Indeed, yes, that's not very far away. No. It's only
a few weeks.
Five, 6 weeks away.
Yeah, that's not somewhere, long away. Somewhere between 1 and 24.
Which, of course, means we're also not far away from the start of Star Trek Picard, which is going to be fantastic. Yeah. Anyway, without faffing any further, let's go in and do our review of episode 17, season 4 of Star Trek Enterprise Bound.
Engage.
So, in the teaser, whilst en route to the Berengarius system, I think that is, to scout prospective sites for Starfleet's first starbase on the system's seventh planet, Enterprise is intercepted by an Orion Syndicate vessel. Archer goes to tactical alert and hails the captain of the vessel, Harad Sar. He demands Archer power down his weapons immediately, or he will attack.
Yes, which is not a very friendly first contact thingy.
He wasn't a very friendly looking chap.
That's true.
And he seemed to know who Archer was before Archer introduced himself, which kind of set me on edge to start with.
And Archer didn't even notice. I mean, didn't ask, how do you know me, or do we know each other, or things like that.
Well, exactly. I'm afraid my quote of the episode came from the teaser.
Yeah, many of them, actually. There's two,
yeah,
three.
So my one was when T'Pol was surveying the planetary system. She said, "A Vulcan science vessel surveyed the planet over 50 years ago. The file states that it's an M-class world with a flourishing ecosystem. no intelligent life.
Yeah. And
she could quite easily have been talking about it.
Yeah, absolutely. And then then they talked about, was it flying creature breathing fire and things like that?
Yes.
That was completely nuts.
Yes. And the look on Archer's face, he was trying very hard not to laugh. But he played that really well.
And then Tipple very seriously said that the file might be, I don't remember exactly the quote she said, but she said that there might be a slight exaggeration on the file. But yeah, very, very serious.
Yeah, you think.
As a Vulcan would be.
Yeah, and completely missing the point in the process.
Yeah. Or maybe not.
Now,
if you refer to the end of the episode. Well,
yes. Indeed. Right. So we're going to go into Act One. And before I do, first of all, we should say, as always, thank you very much to Memory Alpha for the hard work they have done in putting together all the reviews for the episodes that we are talking about. Mm-hmm. But I also want to highlight that actually the review is about half the normal size. Now, Yannick, I think you have a theory as to why the review is short. You mentioned it to me on Telegram earlier in the week, but we'll talk about that towards the end of the show. So in Act One, Archer suggests to the captain of the Orion vessel that they deactivate their weapons together, and Harad Sar, the captain, agrees. He then offers a business proposal, inviting Captain Archer aboard his vessel in the name of smoothing relations between their peoples. Archer decides to accept and, with an away team, heads to the transporter. Along the way, Lieutenant Reed expresses his misgivings, given that their last unfortunate encounter with the Orions nearly turned 9 Enterprise crew members into slaves. Archer tells him it's worth the risk just for the possibility of establishing diplomatic relations with the Syndicate and Starfleet in order to have one less hostile species out there.
Yeah, yeah. I love that quote. I mean, in 3 years, 3.5 years, they managed to make a lot of enemies. So, yeah, I guess one less hostile species would be would be really nice.
Well, you say that, but in the last few episodes, or last 5 or 6 episodes, we have seen a lot of peace breakout between certain species.
Yeah, that's true.
But I can't help feeling that if you're going to take an away team in order to foster peace between different species, turning up an away team with 2 armed Makos is probably not a good way to start.
Yeah, I can see that.
I had to watch that scene a good few times just to prove that they were armed. And they were. They both had rifles slung over their shoulders.
Okay, I didn't really notice that. But it's really, it's not very friendly.
No. I mean, take concealed hand weapons maybe, certainly, but not an open display of force. Mm-hmm. That's not the best way of doing it.
No.
In engineering, Commander Tucker is treated brusquely by Kelby, who feels that his promotion to chief engineer may be threatened by Tucker's continued presence. Tucker assures him it's only temporary, and he will go back to the Columbia NX-02. T'Pol volunteers her services to help with the engines. During, she asks Tucker if he has been experiencing intense daydreams. He jokes around and says no. He asks her if she is going to tell him what it's all about, but she refuses.
Yeah.
I don't get what he has to gain by joking around and effectively laughing it off, except to be his normal self. It just seems really weird that here T'Pol is offering Trip an opportunity to be honest with her, and he's basically just prattling about. And I really thought better of him. I thought he would actually be honest about this and not be
a bit of an idiot. I think it's the continuation of what happened. Not the previous episode, but the previous one when he left Enterprise, when he told Tipple that probably lies about his reasons why he wanted to transfer to Columbia. And I think it's still he's still trying to put some distance between him and Tipple. So that would be a defense mechanism.
I kind of get it, but at the same time, I don't. I know that's the reason why he left Enterprise in the first place, despite his protestations that wasn't the case. You know, we all know mm-hmm. that he's gone away to avoid her.
Yeah.
Hmm. On the Orion ship, Harad Sar begins with small talk, pouring some Mirrodor that Harad Sar obtained from the Gorn Hegemony. The less said about them, the better, he states. He also mentions Archer's reputation. When Archer asks Harad Sar what it was he wanted to discuss with him, the Orion tells him that it is poor custom to discuss business before entertainment. If the food didn't arouse your hunger, this should. Then, three Orion slave girls emerge who dance, scantily clad, in front of the mesmerized Enterprise crewmates.
Yeah. Human males are weak.
It was quite an uncomfortable scene, I have to admit. It was it was very creepy.
Yeah. But the Orion women are always creepy.
Yeah, very intense.
Yeah.
A little exchange here between the three of them. Harad Sar said, "What do you think?" Malcolm says, "I can't think." Harad Sar said, "Captain, Archer, I have to agree with my tactical officer." Pair of tarts.
Yeah, I guess it was the goal, actually. That I mean, I expected something to happen right there, but something happened later, but I was convinced that this was not just for the show, and I was how do you call that second thought, or I don't know how to translate that in English something with motive
ulterior motive. Yes, that it, effectively it was a trap.
Damn. Well, yeah. If you want to use simple words.
Well, hold that thought. I did pick up the reference to Borderland when Harad Sar said that mm-hmm. he bought the Orion slave girls
yeah.
from the colony on, I think it was Verex 3.
Yeah, where they were in...
Yeah, I think Harad Sar made mention of Archer being there before. Mm-hmm. Afterwards, Harad Sar offers Archer the coordinates of a planet rich in magnesite. He proposes to broker a deal between Starfleet and the Syndicate for mining operations. As a token gesture of goodwill, he gives Archer the three slave girls, Navarre, Dinesh, and Maraz. That's more than a token of goodwill.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, Reed shows the Orions to their quarters. Taken by them, he has a little trouble answering their questions about the ship and the location of Archer's quarters. He leads Navarre to quarters first, and then awkwardly leaves her to see the other two.
Yeah.
Yeah. There goes Malcolm.
Yeah. He was really struggling, and you could see everyone on the ship turning their heads when the three Orion women were walking in the corridors. I knew that was trouble walking.
Yeah. Alarm bells were going off all over the place for me, because not only did both Archer and Malcolm seem to be a little more under their spell than I expected them to be,
yeah.
but also they're wandering fairly freely around the ship at this point. Yeah. And yeah, well, it doesn't get any better.
Nope.
So into Act 2 then. As Enterprise travels to the coordinates to examine the planet, T'Pol reports numerous disruptions due to the presence of the women.
Yeah. No, really?
She also reminds Archer of Starfleet's official stance on slavery. The crew members seem obviously distracted by the three very seductive women. The men begin competing with each other and exhibiting aggressive behaviour, while female crew members experience intense headaches. Reed and Travis discuss the recent arrival of the Orion women while working out in the ship's gymnasium. Travis recalls when he was 15 years old, the ECS Horizon picked up some Deltan women whose ship was having engine trouble. He recalls that they were very open. The only thing that helped him get through it was weight training with his father, as the pain of working out took the images of the females out of his mind. Reed decides to take his advice, but Travis suggests that he uses bigger weights.
Yeah. And Travis, Travis seemed to really struggle. I mean, it was painful to watch.
I don't know whether Reed is particularly stronger than Travis is, but I did notice that when Travis took the weights out of the little caddy thing mm-hmm. where we're in, he really struggled to pick them up and lift them up.
Yeah.
And then Malcolm came along and went to his weight caddy and pulls them out and starts just like throwing them around all over the place. And I don't know whether they were much lighter weights because Malcolm is a lighter weight or whether he's particularly stronger.
No,
I don't know.
I think those are adjustable weights. So you just pick them up and set the force or something like that. It's I think I recalled that from another series or another episode where you can just set whatever force you want. It's kind of
okay,
magic.
What the weights come out when you pull it mm-hmm. to the weight.
Then you turn you flip a switch and it gets heavier.
Mm. Later, Hoshi enters sickbay and asks for a treatment for a headache that she's having. Phlox can detect nothing wrong with her, just as he did for Ensign Keely, a fellow female officer, a few minutes prior. Oddly, Phlox nearly falls to the floor while preparing medication for Hoshi. He notes that he seems to be nearing a new sleep cycle, even though, as Hoshi points out, he's only recently finished one.
Yeah, I thought it took a lot of time for Hoshi to notice that there was something wrong with Phlox. I mean, it was obvious from the first second that it was not very well.
No, I noticed pretty much straight away that he seemed to be limping. Yeah. But I didn't know whether I looked a bit deeper and thought that maybe that John Billingsley had an accident mm-hmm. before filming and was actually limping, really limping, and that they wrote in the collapse in order to cover it.
Maybe.
It never occurred to me at this stage that actually there might be something else at play here. Until later on in the episode.
Yeah.
Yeah. Numerous skirmishes and challenges to authority are also observed. Navarre works her way closer and closer to the captain, while Dinesh has chosen Kelby as the object of her affections and manipulations. Dinesh goes to engineering and gets Kelby to show her around. Kelby initially hesitates, but then gives her a tour and neglects his duties at the same time. Tucker soon sees this and takes him aside to reprimand him. However, Kelby refuses to comply and defies him, noting his existing concerns with Tucker's role over him. Tucker has to order him to quarters or to the brig. He finally backs down in full view of Dinesh.
Yeah, he was not very pleased, our chief engineer.
No. Well, neither of them were, to be honest with you.
Neither of them, yeah.
Now, I have a question, and this I don't know whether this is a continuity error or not. When Tucker pulled Kelby aside, he called him Lieutenant. And yet, in episode 15, Affliction, he was called Commander. Mm-hmm. Now, I thought Kelby was a commander, because I remember asking at the time, did he get a promotion as part of his adoption of the role of Chief Engineer, or was he already a commander?
So he would have been demoted in the space of two episodes?
Maybe. I don't know.
I don't know.
I'll do some digging around on that one, because it bugs me a little bit.
Is Trip a commander?
Yeah. Trip is a commander. So, he's always been a commander.
So maybe for this scene where he orders Kelby to stand down, they needed Trip to be higher in the chain of command. So they just, you know, they thought about the 80% who wouldn't notice that, and then they went with that.
I suppose that's true. Tucker could have just been rude, derogatory towards Kelby by referring to him as a rank lower than he actually is. But even later on in that scene, Kelby actually says to Tucker, "You are my superior officer."
Yeah. Yeah. Who knows? Maybe they.
So it's an odd one. It really is.
Who was showrunner at the time?
It was still Brandon Braga, wasn't it?
So Mr. Braga,
he was lead showrunner.
Yeah. So Mr. Braga, if you're listening to this, please come join us on the show next week and tell us if we're imagining things or if there has been some kind of continuity error. But you're forgiven anyway.
Oh, yeah. Goes without saying. Well, the episode is 14 and a half years old.
Yeah.
Not much you can do about it now.
Reshoot some scenes and edit a special edition DVD set.
What, with a director's apology?
No, with the scene reshot with the correct...
I see. Right. Yeah. Yes. With the one that was actually broadcast as an extra, put the correct one in its place, of course. Navarre, getting a visit from the captain, is told that she and her sisters are guests, not slaves. But she says she can't imagine any other life other than slavery. Calling him an honest man, she says even though Archer doesn't wish to own her, she still wants to please him. They kiss, but are interrupted by the Enterprise arriving at the planet.
Yeah, good timing, T'Pol.
He wasn't happy.
No.
At all.
No, he wasn't.
But also, the communication channel was still open.
Yeah.
Between
T'Pol,
between T'Pol telling him that they'd arrived at the planet and him acknowledging that.
Yeah.
Alongside the slurping noises of the kiss and the heavy breathing alongside it. So... if T'Pol didn't hear that, then she must have been
probably
distracted by something else.
Or she probably cut the communication, you know. We know she's listening to everything, so she probably covers for Archer.
Yes. Something else about Hoshi comes up later on that I think has surprised us both. We'll talk about that when we get to it.
Yeah.
So at this point, I'm noticing that the girls are having an effect on the entire crew, but not necessarily on the way you might think. And I did notice that Archer was unsteady on his feet with Navarre before she even started with him.
Yeah. They don't have to have physical contact with the male to make them go crazy.
They might just be having an adverse effect to the green makeup.
You know, I watched closely on the scene to see if Archer would get some green... what's the name of the actor? Scott Bakula. I watched to see if Scott Bakula would end up with green makeup on his hands or on his face, but no. I don't know what they are using, but it seems to be a good makeup.
There was a scene, and I think it might be later on in the episode, when one of the girls stretches out on a bed,
mm-hmm.
and I'm thinking it might be in the next act, and yet they ended the scene at that point, probably because they realised that if she'd moved, you would have seen all the green makeup on the sheets.
Probably.
Yeah.
Yeah.
After having reluctantly left Navarre in his quarters, Archer arrives at the bridge. T'Pol states that, as promised, they detect significant amounts of magnesite. Archer appears unsteady on the bridge as he orders scans to find out how much. A small ship is soon detected and, with minimal weapons, fires on them. T'Pol says they're probably a science vessel, and Reed says that it is impossible for the small ship to damage Enterprise even if they kept on continuously firing at it. Archer, shockingly, orders the phase cannons to fire and destroy the vessel, but Reed refuses the order. Archer tries to push him away in order to do it himself, but just then the ship moves on unharmed.
Yeah. I don't know. It's very atypical from both Archer and Reed. I guess it goes with whatever effects the Orion female have on the crew, but I usually don't like when the characters we know and love suddenly act differently on every series, actually. So I didn't really like this scene, but I guess it fits on with the rest of the episode.
It does, and I managed to draw a parallel to a different film altogether outside the Star Trek universe.
Yeah, there is something outside the Star Trek universe.
There is something outside the Star Trek universe, but actually there is a vague similarity. Superman 3 is in that film. He is presented as a form of an award, a green substance, which they think is kryptonite. But Superman doesn't recognize it because it isn't true kryptonite. It's been tainted by some unknown compound that they inserted because they didn't know what it was supposed to be.
Okay.
And because of the exposure to this material, that nobody really understood what it was, Superman became a very, very dark version of himself and became moody, became angry, made very irrational decisions. So I'm wondering whether it is more than just coincidence that the Orion slave girls are also green.
The Orions were in the original series, which predates Superman. Well, no, she predates the movies, but probably not the comics.
Oh, no, the comics have been around for decades, but the film was...
Yeah.
Late 70s, was it?
I don't know, yeah. Yeah, so maybe it doesn't predate that much, but the comics were very, very, very old. Superman was, So... Kryptonite was probably invented before the Orion.
Yeah, so maybe
Star Trek copied.
Star Trek copied it, or the makeup that they used to cover the Orion girls was made up of this
kryptonite,
invalid kryptonite.
Yeah, or the TV studios had tons of green makeup. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, when did the Incredible Hulk come out?
Ooh, the comics? Very, very early, too.
No. The
movie?
The TV series.
The TV series?
I think, well, the series was first, wasn't it? That would have been 1970s.
I don't know.
Oh, no, but you said the Orions were in the original series, which was 60s. Mm-hmm. So, no, maybe not.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, moving onwards. Meanwhile, Dinesh has found Kelby's quarters and visits him.
That's a very...
That was the end of Act 2.
Yeah.
Oh, dear. So then, we're now on Act 3. We're halfway through the review, would you believe? This is going to be a nice short one.
Yeah. For once.
I'm sure we can still push it up to an hour and three quarters. That seems to be our time.
Yeah.
Kelby and Dinesh are in bed in the engineer's quarters talking. Kelby complaining about Tucker and thinking that he's better than him. Dinesh provokes his feelings by agreeing with him, but when he tries to end the conversation, Dinesh starts to leave, saying that Kelby doesn't know what he wants. He says he will do anything to keep her there. They lay back in bed and passionately kiss. We know what Kelby wants.
Yeah.
just saying.
Yeah. Yeah, well, it was getting obvious that he was going to do something strange and weird and probably not very kind.
No, not at all. Well,
I thought he was I thought he was going to go for a trip and, you know, maybe try to throw him out of the vessel through a bulkhead or something like that.
Okay. Not entirely unlikely, I suppose.
No.
I believe, sole viewer on YouTube at the moment is Lainey. Hi, Lainey.
Hey, Lainey.
She points out that Superman 3 was released in 1983. But I was referring to the Superman film franchise as a whole. But yeah, quite point well taken that Superman 3 would have been well after.
Proof
thank
on
you very
the
much
screen.
Would have been well after the original series. Right, so then, Kelby covertly enters engineering and quickly makes his way to an engineering console on the upper level. While Tucker is operating controls on the warp core, an alarm goes off and he finds Kelby above him sabotaging the EPS system. Tucker and Kelby engage in a fistfight and Tucker eventually subdues him, but the system is severely damaged.
Well, yeah. Yeah, he managed to do some very bad stuff to the EPS conduits.
Yeah. I'm a bit concerned that he was able to do that so quickly and easily. I get that he's the chief engineer and he needs to have that level of knowledge. But if you're able to go into any system and just completely trash it without protocols, it's not a good thing.
Well, we don't know for how long he's been there, do we? We don't see him. We didn't see him enter the room.
Oh.
So he might have been there for a while, and we just had the end when the alarm went off.
Did we not see him? No, he did. He did. He went. He came in through like a service hatch.
Okay, so
and we saw him go to that console. So yeah, it did seem to have been done really quickly.
Okay. Yeah, so they probably have something to adjust in their Starfleet protocols.
If indeed they have any. If only they had a protocol manager. But that was quite a fight.
Yeah.
It was quite impressive.
Oh, yeah.
And I did actually at one point think that Tucker was going to throw Kelby over the safety rail.
Yeah. I thought that
which
too,
would have been quite damaging.
Yeah. But no.
Now I did notice at this point, and this was genuinely the point where I realized that Trip seems to be the only one not affected by the Orion women.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. Not sure I noticed that at this moment, but yeah, it's kind of obvious now. And we know why later.
We do. Shh. Don't tell anyone.
No, it's not like they had 15 years to watch the episode.
Yes, but they're supposed to be watching it with us.
Oh, okay.
So is it really annoying? It'd be really annoying if everybody that's listening to us in this show has already watched the episodes before we did. So actually, they're not getting the reveals at the same time we are.
Yeah, I understand. So yeah, hopefully, 15 years later, it's still a spoiler.
Yeah. Can you imagine if we tried to do this as a live, where we commentate on the show as we watch it?
Yeah, we could do that.
Well, we'd end up missing half of it because we'd be talking all the way through. Yeah. Anyway, moving on.
That and copyright infringement, but
you wouldn't have to play the audio. We could wear headphones.
Yeah, so okay, so it's the audience would have to sync with the show, and then the audience would have to watch both things. Yeah, okay.
Exactly.
That could work.
In sick bay, Phlox reveals that Kelby is suffering from escalated levels of adrenaline brought on by the pheromones from the Orion slave girls. These pheromones are accelerating the crew's metabolism, causing aggression and delusional behavior among men and headaches and discomfort amongst women in order to divert competition. Phlox has also been affected, he says, forcing him to rely on stimulants to counter his interrupted sleep cycle. Only Tucker and T'Pol appear to be immune. Phlox says for everyone else, the longer they're exposed, the worse the effects will be. And you have just acted out the bit that I found the most amusing from that scene.
Yeah.
When Phlox says, I'm having to use stimulants to counter my sleep cycle.
And yeah, casually just
just kind of injects
himself.
Are there not rules about him self-medicating?
Apparently not.
No.
No. Yeah.
There again, if he's the only qualified doctor on board, who's going to be prescribing drugs to him?
Yeah. That's a good call, yeah. So, oh my.
So it's Tucker and T'Pol that are apparently immune.
Yeah.
Can't think why.
Mm.
The Orion slave girls are imprisoned in the decon chamber, and a search of their quarters turns up a communications device which they have been using to speak with Harad Sar. Archer confronts them, and Navarre nearly convinces him to release them, but T'Pol brings the captain to his senses. The Orion women continue to deny everything.
Yeah. Of course they do. I didn't do nothing.
Now, it occurred to me that if only Trip and T'Pol are immune to the Orion pheromones, then why did they leave two Makos, vulnerable Makos, in charge of them? I couldn't see that going well.
Yeah, that's what I thought too. I mean, T'Pol should have stayed there or ask Trip to stay there. But obviously, leaving two Makos was a mistake. I can understand that Archer wouldn't say anything, but T'Pol should have reacted.
Yes. Unless she didn't realize at that point that only she and Trip were immune from the from the effects of the women.
Wasn't she in sickbay when Phlox said that they were immune?
Yes. No, you're right.
Yeah.
You're right. She did know. So she should have realized then that the Makos would have been vulnerable to the... that the Makos would have been vulnerable to the Orion girls purely because she knew that it was only her and one other that weren't.
Yeah. So, yeah. Tactical error from Tipol.
Indeed. Tipol wants to go back to the bridge to keep an eye on Archer, but he orders her to engineering to help Trip work on the repairs. Tipol tells Tucker that there have been altercations throughout the ship and that she is worried about the captain. Tucker says he can't figure out why he is the only male on the ship to be unaffected by the pheromone. Tipol says that since Tucker and Tipol have mated, air quotes for the cover camera, he is bound psychically to her, and thus he enjoys the immunity granted by her Vulcan physiology.
Yeah.
And he admitted that he had been daydreaming about her.
Yeah. Yeah, it was funny this this thing when Tipol said, maybe because we mated, and Tucker said, we didn't mate, and she said...
We didn't mate, no. She
said, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Although I found it quite amusing that it was him that brought up the distinction between mating and what they shared. I would have expected it to be the female.
Yeah.
That would be more sensitive to the wording used.
But she's a Vulcan, so...
She's a Vulcan, precisely. And actually, he does display some quite outward signs of sensitivity.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, I would say he probably displays more feminine sensitivity than she does.
Yes, I agree.
Which is probably quite a controversial statement, but...
But she's Vulcan.
But she's Vulcan, indeed. Now, question from me. Why are we only just seeing the effects of this psychic bond when the point in time they're referring to was just over halfway through season 3? So we're now over a season in advance, a season later, and this is the first time we're seeing, or okay, maybe in the last episode or two, the first time we're seeing this link, this psychic link between Trip and T'Pol.
Maybe because it's the first time they are they've been separated. They've been far from each other.
Okay.
Just guessing.
You could classify that as a trauma.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
For both of them.
There was no need to, you know, to have those daydreams when they were actually seeing each other every day.
Yes. And they were obviously talking.
Yeah.
Whereas now they can't, so they're finding other ways to communicate. Okay. So, last scene of the act. With Enterprise's engines disabled, Harad Sar returns. Archer hails him and defiantly says their weapons are still functional. Harad Sar isn't concerned, saying the Syndicate has put a reward on Archer's head, dead or alive, and they don't care if it is still attached to his body.
Yeah.
So this explains how he knew who Archer was right at the beginning of the episode, because he was clearly there for a reason.
Yeah, and this doesn't explain why Archer didn't find that suspicious in the first place, but... No,
it doesn't. But, I mean... Archer must be fairly famous.
Yeah.
Around space.
I guess.
So I suppose it's not completely unlikely that people would know who he is. It was the same with Kirk, with Picard,
mm-hmm.
that
well,
everybody would have known of them, even if they didn't actually meet them.
You can't be the captain of the flagship of Starfleet and not being known.
Precisely. Yes. So, yeah, that's the end of Act 3.
Yeah.
So, Act 4 then. Harad Sar is now ready to claim his reward, the Enterprise and Captain Archer. After a brief battle, the Orion vessel knocks out the Enterprise's weapon systems, including both fore and aft phaser cannons. The Orion ship hooks Enterprise and begins towing her away. He hails them again and reveals to them that it is him who is the slave, a slave to the Orion females on Archer's ship.
Dun, dun, dun.
And I'm like,
whoa.
What? I didn't see that coming.
Nope. Me neither.
But everything just drops into place now.
Yeah.
Totally.
Yeah. Although I thought for a moment you might be lying, but I don't think so, no. So.
No, the way he said it, it was so casual
mm-hmm.
that it could not be true.
Yeah. I understand.
So, when the Orion ship fired its grappler,
mm-hmm.
it hit the Enterprise absolutely dead center of the front of the ship.
Yeah.
Not slightly off to one side, not between two hull panels, dead center.
It's easier to pull after that, you know.
I would have thought that, you know, a couple of degrees in either direction wouldn't have made that much difference.
Like 17 degrees?
Maybe. But I don't know why. I really don't know why I tend to pick up on details like that.
Yeah. You know.
I'm sure it's annoying. That is annoying.
It's a gift or a curse.
It's... yeah, a curse. Yeah. T'Pol and Tucker have a plan to release the Enterprise, and Archer tells her to try it. She just has to wait on Tucker's final adjustments. Just then, having convinced their guards to let them escape, really? The Orion females now emerge from the turbo lift onto the bridge. Dines begins fondling Reed while Navarre talks to the captain. Navarre persuades Archer to have T'Pol arrested, saying that she is just jealous. Archer complies and orders Malcolm to arrest T'Pol. Hoshi protests, but the men ignore her. Malcolm draws his phase pistol and begins to carry out the order, but is stunned unconscious by Tucker, who also stuns Archer and Travis.
Bam bam.
Yeah. He signals to... He signals T'Pol, who uses the ship's deflector to send a positron burst through the grappling line to Haradsar's ship, disabling it and releasing the grappler. The Orion females, after one final failed attempt to woo Tucker, are escorted off the bridge by phase pistol and are later sent back to their ship.
Yeah.
So why were they not able to overpower the people that were escorting them back to the ship?
Good.
I'm sure they must have. They must have been,
but
capable of.
Yeah, but Trip accompanied them. He went in the turbo lift with them, so I guess he.
Oh,
was the
okay.
One.
Yeah, okay. So that's this. That's the security element, isn't it?
Yeah. Just to come back on the guards who have been convinced to let them escape. I mean, they probably didn't have to do a lot of convincing. those Orions. It was obvious from the look on the guard when on the previous scene when Archer and T'Pol left the brig that something like that was going to happen.
Those pesky Orions.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was funny to see the look on their face on their faces when they tried to seduce Trip. You know, they said, "Oh, you seem to be the one who's running the ship," and they say, "Oh, come on, yeah. You're sweet talking the wrong guy. Come on." And they were really disappointed.
Yeah. Well, they obviously thought that they had effect on everybody.
Yeah.
So they're probably not understanding
mm-hmm.
why. Oh, yeah, who is this bloke? Is he human?
Yeah.
So the grappling line and the positron burst that they fired up it. Isn't a positron a form of electrical energy?
I guess everything is...
So,
yeah.
Is it likely that we would actually see it travel quite slowly up a cable?
Probably not in the vacuum of space, no.
No.
No, I don't think so.
I would have thought that if a positron was going to travel up, I suppose it depends on the material that the cable's made of. There could be something in there that could slow it down, maybe. But I would have thought that it would have been a case of, pew, and it's gone.
Yeah, but that wouldn't have made CG shot. So, yeah.
They probably thought, well, you know, we're about 7 seconds short on this scene. How can we elongate it?
Yeah.
Hockey dockies, so we're actually very close to the end of the review. Phlox begins treating the affected crew, who are slowly starting to recover. The after effects will last for a few days. T'Pol makes a joke, and Archer says that she seems to be picking up some of Trip's bad habits. As Enterprise warps away to continue its mission, T'Pol and Tucker walk down the corridor together. He says Captain Hernandez must want her chief engineer back on the Columbia, and T'Pol says that there are still repairs to make on Enterprise. T'Pol asks him to remain on board as part of their crew to benefit the Enterprise. He asks her if she wants him to stay for personal reasons, and she says she doesn't understand.
Liar.
Yeah. He turns to leave, but T'Pol pursues him, and she says she does want him to come back. He says he'll think about it and starts to walk away again. T'Pol grabs him and kisses him. Tucker. Exactly the reaction I had. Tucker agrees to stay and reveals that he had actually made an official request for transfer back to Enterprise 3 days earlier.
Okay, so I have a question. 3 days earlier, that was probably before the Orion came on board.
So yep, I would say so.
When he said to Kelby at the beginning of the episode that his presence was only temporary, he was lying.
Yes, if I'm understanding this final scene, then everything around the transfer back to Enterprise was for T'Pol, but he wanted her to say it. He wanted her to say, I want you back here for me, not for the ship. Yeah. So all he had to do was continue the pretense that he was the chief engineer on Columbia and he needed to go back there. And Hernandez had already said, I think it might be in the last episode, that she wanted her chief engineer back. So all he had to do was just continue spinning that line. And his story was safe.
Yeah, so I guess.
So he's been running with this for the last few days. And, well, I didn't see this coming.
No, me neither.
There was there were no clues there that he actually had intended to transfer to Enterprise. He still had the Columbia patch on his arm.
Yeah, I was thinking about that while you were talking, but that he said that he made a request for transfer. Doesn't say that he didn't say that Hernandez actually accepted. So
he did say that in the episode. Mm-hmm. He did say that. He said that he made the request and Hernandez had approved it.
Okay, so
essentially he is now Enterprise's chief engineer again.
Or he will be once the transfer is official.
Yeah. I don't know whether he has to give like 28 days notice or something.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm so impressed with Trip for executing that.
Yeah.
Yes, it was deception. But if he set out to do that in order to force T'Pol to effectively admit that she has feelings for him, despite the fact that 5-6 episodes ago she said she didn't want anything to do with him anymore. While she was finding out who she was, clearly she now knows who she is.
Yeah. I thought at the end of the episode, you know, when Trip walks away and there's a shot of T'Pol, I thought that she was, you know, maybe smile or something like that. But no, I think she was kind of, you know, happy or things like that. But as Vulcans are, that she was just straight face. But I could see her smile inside.
Yeah, a part of me wanted her to punch him.
Yeah. And curse.
Big. Yeah, yeah. You utter, yes. But no. So, all in all, I think the episode...
Meh.
It wasn't the best one we've seen. Yeah, meh. It's not the best one we've seen.
No.
I think the episode, for me, the thing that made the episode was the last minute and a half.
Yeah, and I liked Phlox because, well, I always liked Phlox. But yeah, as a whole, yeah, it was not really not the best episode.
No.
I think they should have them, and I thought that was going to be the case, that they should have, you know, rendered all the men, you know, I don't know, incapacitated or something like that, and have the women of the Enterprise, you know, running the ship for a while, you know, putting all the guys in the brig or confine them to quarters, and you know, and try to do to fight the Orion females. But that would have been an interesting plot saver. Maybe I should write an episode of Star Trek.
I'm just trying to see how that would work. I'm not sure whether coming soon from the Other Side podcast network, Star Trek Orion, anytime soon. But
we know Oshi and Tipal work well together. So now you just have to bring a few other female characters and have a bridge of only female, and then you know, forbid the men from coming on the bridge.
Yeah, well, so there's five of them, isn't there? There's five females.
Oh, there's,
I'm sure they could
probably
they could
more
cause,
than that, but five that we know.
I'm not aware of any other.
Well, there was at least
two
in engineering,
Ensign Keeley.
Yeah, Keeley, T'Pol,
and yeah, I think you're right that there's
a couple of them in engineering.
So a couple of handfuls of females,
mm-hmm.
But yeah, I'm sure they could do a better job of running the ship than the men have.
Yeah, probably. Yeah.
Talking of Hoshi, as we weren't, so we learned on this episode that she is
protocol officer.
On aboard Enterprise. Yeah. And then you think about the conversation we had a few episodes ago about her monitoring communications and such like that. You're thinking, what protocols are these?
Yeah. I don't know. I can see that, you know, being part of the job of the linguists specialist on board, as she probably has knowledge of the culture and the language, so maybe she knows, you know, more stuff about other cultures, you know, like when she was training Archer to insult the Tellarite.
Mm.
That's probably part of her job to study the cultures, so that she can understand the language a little bit better.
I suppose to an extent, yes, because. So let me read you what the Memory Alpha article says on Protocol Officer, because it's a very, very short article. It says, a protocol officer was a crew member aboard Starfleet vessels in the 22nd century, responsible for ensuring that various rules and regulations aboard ship were known and followed.
Okay, so that's not what I thought it was.
But if you're talking about interspecies protocols or intercivilization protocols, then actually that kind of falls under the same umbrella, because if you're not following cultural conventions and the like, then you're not fulfilling the directive of the mission.
Yeah.
So yeah, everything they do and everybody they do with would come under the rules and regulations of Starfleet. Yeah. So
yeah, it's not completely illogical. It's just that it's the first time we heard about that in four seasons. So I was kind of surprised.
Yeah. So it says here that Hoshi's position as protocol officer aboard Enterprise was also listed in a personnel file about her in the library computer aboard the USS Defiant, which is mentioned in two episodes' time.
Oh, the Defiant in Enterprise?
Yes.
I know the Defiant from Deep Space Nine, but it's probably not the same Defiant. Well,
the next two episodes are Mirror Universe.
Ah, okay.
So anything could come from anywhere, I suppose. Anyway,
yeah.
So that concludes our review of episode 17, season 4 of Star Trek Enterprise, Bound.
So, as we do every 2 weeks when we don't have a guest, we are going to go over some news. Unfortunately, this fortnight we have some very sad news. So let's get on with those sad news before we move on to something more joyful. René Auberjonois, who played Odo on Star Trek Deep Space Nine, passed away earlier this week. I was surprised that they talked about him on the Swiss radio, and there's a good reason for that. It's because he was the grandson of Swiss painter René Auberjonois and the son of a locally known writer and journalist, Fernand Auberjonois, who also was living in Switzerland. The actor who played Odo died earlier this week at the age of 79, which is always too soon for anyone to go. It's sad, but things that happen. It seems that at the end of this year, but I'm pretty sure anyone will confirm that it's kind of every year we hear more about people passing away at the end of the year, or is it something that's the season or something? I don't know, but it's
I don't know. I know that we've observed this before, and I'm pretty certain the last time it happened to this extent was at the beginning of 2018, when we lost about five or six well-known celebrities, certainly in this country, in very quick succession.
Yeah. I don't know. Something maybe like the weather or... I don't know. René Auberjonois was actually here, so it's a sickness who got him. I've read online that in the Star Trek Online game, people actually took their characters, because they didn't go physically, but they took their characters to Deep Space Nine, to the constable office, where they had their character hold a torch for a very long period of time. I think they did some 24 hours or something like that to pay respect to René Auberjonois, which is a very, very touching thing to do. So, our prayers go to his family, of course.
Absolutely.
And well, another sad news, just a few days, even a few hours maybe after that, when Marina Sirtis announced that her husband passed away, also peacefully in his sleep, at the age of 61. So yeah, really too early for that. So once again, our thoughts and prayers go to Marina Sirtis and his family, her family, and his husband's family.
Yeah, absolutely. And whilst it appears though these things do happen in threes, there was another one.
Yeah.
Robert Walker Jr., who only actually starred in one episode of Star Trek.
Yeah, but
and it was the second,
a very, very, very well-known episode.
Yeah, it was the second aired episode of the original series. Well, second aired episode of Star Trek at all.
Yeah.
Charlie X was the episode, which was released in September 1966. He played the title character, Charles Evans, in the episode Charlie X. And he died earlier on this week. Sorry, late last week. Was also at the age of 79.
Yeah.
But yeah, very famous actor.
Yeah. I guess there's no way to do a proper transition to some happier news. So just dive.
Just do it.
Yeah, just do
it.
Star Trek Section 31 has a writer's room. Star Trek is getting ready to begin another new voyage. The Section 31-focused Star Trek Discovery spin-off is set to film its pilot episode once production on Discovery's third season is complete.
Yeah.
Yay. While CBS All Access hasn't ordered the show to series yet, its executive vice president of original content, Julie McNamara, says that Alex Kurtzman has already assembled a writer's room. And she also says, "We are very excited about the Section 31 show. We have scripts getting written and Alex has a writer's room. We love what we've heard so far. It's yet another tonality of Star Trek. As Alex has mapped it all out, each show has its own unique sort of voice and vision." So yeah, we're looking forward for that.
And I think that now more than ever, certainly in my generation, Star Trek is as popular, if not more so, than it has ever been.
Yeah,
because of the reboots, because of Discovery, because of Discovery, and the suggestion of the spin-offs from Discovery. Because we're aware of one at the moment, but there could potentially be others.
Yeah.
And of course, Picard, which actually happens at the beginning of next year. So I'd be very surprised if this doesn't go ahead. Alex Kurtzman has form. He has shown himself to be a phenomenal showrunner, not just in Star Trek, but in other TV series as well. So
yeah.
he is the current J.J. Abrams. Because J.J. Abrams went through a thing about 10 years ago of just producing series after series after series, and then the films we don't talk about. So at the moment, I think Alex Kurtzman is in the heyday of his run. So I'm hoping that I know it will. This will happen.
Yeah.
I'm excited for it.
I think that Star Trek has become, dare I say it, mainstream, as in it's no longer a geeky thing. And you know, before Discovery, when you were talking to, you take a group of friends and one of them would say, "Oh, I like Star Trek." It would be maybe looked, you know, like, "Oh,
yeah.
You're a geek," or something like that. While now it's become mainstream, and everybody loves Star Trek. And also,
you could say that Doctor Who went through the same thing.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And I think that the fact that Kurtzman is running Picard, Discovery, probably Section 31, maybe Star Trek Pike, I don't know. He can have something coherent. It's not like, you know, there was three series of Star Trek run by three different person, and you know, the fact that he's running everything, can we expect some crossover maybe for
yeah,
those things that
crossover
are
crossover continuity certainly. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. There's only one thing that's bothering me. It's that Michelle Yeoh is supposed to be on the Section 31 series, but she's also in season 3 of Discovery. So she's in the future. Oh
no, she's not.
She's in season 3 of Discovery. So
she's in season three of Discovery, but she didn't go with
season 4,
Discovery.
So because the article that I've linked says that she's working on Discovery right now, so that's why they can't start filming Section 31 before she finishes that. Let me find Michelle Yeoh is excited to do it, says Jodie McNamara. She's in the current season of Discovery, so she's working on that right now. But we have scripts getting written, and Alex has a writer's room, etc. So, yeah, Michelle Yeoh is in season 4 of Discovery. So, what's going to happen? I don't know. Maybe
I don't know, but I'm convinced that she stayed behind.
Dun, dun, dun.
She must have done. She moved off.
Yeah.
Oh, I don't know now.
I don't remember. I don't know. Oh, maybe, you know, it's not because Discovery is in the future that we won't have any flashbacks or maybe run two timelines. I don't know. We'll see that, I hope, pretty soon.
Yeah.
And hello, Nate. Nate just joined us.
There he is.
On YouTube, yeah. Okay, last piece of news for this week. Star Trek Picard has a very different story from The Next Generation. Star Trek Picard is bringing back Patrick Stewart as Jean-Luc Picard, his beloved character from Star Trek The Next Generation. In an interview, Kurtzman says, "We were very excited about the idea of bringing Patrick back, but he didn't want to come back. He said he was never going to play that part again. So we entered into that, knowing Patrick is going to have a major, major voice in whatever this becomes, if we were going to get him to say yes. He doesn't want to repeat what he's done already. The show is inspired by Next Gen, and it's written by people who grew up loving it, but it is very much not Next Gen. It feels like a modern adult drama in the world of Star Trek, which has not actually really happened before. It's also singularly about a man in his emeritus years, and there are very few franchises that would allow you to have an almost 80-year-old lead and tell his story." And actually, the article goes on talking about how they treat the Borg in Star Trek Picard, and apparently it's going to be very different from what they did in Next Gen. And I think it's a good thing that Patrick Stewart has its word in what's going to happen, and also that he doesn't want to repeat what he did before. I mean, there are lots of actors that you know, maybe we don't hear from them for a long time, and then they come back in either a sequel or something else, and they are actually doing the exact same thing they were doing previously. So yeah, it's part of what's exciting about Star Trek Picard is that we know it's still Jean-Luc Picard, but it's not going to be the captain of the Enterprise as we know him. So it's going to be very interesting.
I mean, we're already getting hints from that we're getting hints of that from the trailers we've seen already.
Yeah,
and the other news articles we've seen. It's nice to see it confirmed.
Mm-hmm.
That actually what we're not getting here is the next
season generation
of Next Gen.
The next generation.
The new next generation.
The new next generation.
Generation next.
Generation X.
Yeah, we've had that.
No, yeah.
Yeah.
So that's, yeah, that concludes the news for this fortnight. Yeah, as usual, thank you, lovely listeners, for downloading or streaming the podcast. If you like our show as much as we like to put it together, leave us a nice review in your podcast app. That will make us very happy.
It does.
Yeah. Also, help us spread the word about our existence by painting its name on a football field so the International Space Station can see it. Or maybe, if that's more practical, just share the website on various social media.
But if you do paint it onto a football field, make sure that at the angle that the space station sees it, it's rectangular. Yeah. So it's not at an angle. Yeah. Just saying. So, talking of our web... Yes, exactly. Talking of our website, you can find our website at teearlgreyhot.org, and there you can find all of the reviews that we've done, all the episodes we've published since episode zero, part B, and full details on how to get in contact with us, which we'll tell you about anyway. But everything you would ever want to know about our show, you can find at that website, teearlgreyhot.org.
Yes, absolutely. If you want to send us email, you can do that by sending an electronic courier at feedback@teearlgreyhot.org. We read everything. We might read your feedback on the show, unless, of course, you tell us otherwise.
You can also find us on social networks. We are on Twitter, we're on Facebook, and we're also on Telegram. Our username on all three of those services is TEGH Podcast.
We are also on Mastodon, on the mastodon.social instance, and we are at TEGH Podcast.
This week's review used material from Bound, an article on the Memory Alpha Wiki, which is licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial License.
Unless otherwise stated, this episode is released under a Creative Commons by Attribution share-alike license, which means you can do pretty much whatever you want with it, as long as you credit us as the original authors, and if you publish something based on this episode, you have to release it under the same license.
This podcast is part of the Other Side Podcast Network. Please find more of our shows over at otherside.network, and we have a huge number... Well, we have the same number we had the last time we mentioned it. However, I can possibly hint to there being a new show.
Really?
Hopefully joining the slate very, very soon. So if you go to otherside.network and keep looking, yeah, you may find something new.
Yeah, probably at the beginning of next year. Not spoiling anything, but... our next episode will be a review of Star Trek Enterprise Season 4, Episode 18, In a Mirror Darkly, which is the first of a two-parter arc about the Mirror Universe. And we will be joined by our first ever returning guest.
Ooh. Wonder who that is.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah, I do know who that is. I was just thinking. Yeah, I do know.
Wow. You wrote the notes, Yannick.
Yeah, we're so professional.
Oh, dear.
Brilliant. Yeah. Right. Well, I guess that's it for this week. Unless you have anything else to add, Dave?
No, that is everything from me.
All right.
Been a good one.
So, thank you for listening. We will catch you next week for our next episode. In the meantime, take care of yourselves. Ciao, ciao.
See ya.